part of flyover country. This is Spin Sold Separately.
Boy, oh boy, is it becoming any clearer how the media feels about people that are considering voting for Donald Trump? Wow. In the last 36 hours, we've been called garbage, stupid, and weak. That's a hell of a closing argument if you're really trying to widen your net and bring more people into your voting block. That is not the strategy I would go with, but I guess we'll all find out together how it goes. Welcome back. Thank you for joining me once again. This is Spin Sold Separately. I am JD. I got to tell you, I had an MRI this morning. That is my first experience with those. I had no idea those things were so loud. Holy moly, Rocky. Boy, did I just date myself with that statement. But they are incredibly loud. And they give you, I mean, I don't know how many of you have had them before. They give you earplugs. So, I mean, it's tolerable, but I work around airplanes all day. And with the set of earplugs I was given, I can barely hear a jet engine run when I'm 100 feet away from it. This was, wow, all the different, I mean, and so many different noises. I mean, I don't know if I heard the same tone or vibration or mechanical sound twice. It was bizarre. I never dealt with that before. And I must say, God bless our medical workers. If anything positive came out of the COVID pandemic that we all mercilessly suffered through for the better part of 2 years of our lives, at least this group of people, our medical community, the people on the ground, the nurses, the doctors that you see in your own local hospital, your own clinic, the radiology techs, the receptionists, the nurse practitioners, these people, I tell you, I have such an admiration for them. We give them such implicit trust. I mean, you walk into an office you've never been in, sit in a contraption you've never been in with somebody you've never met, and they say, okay, I'm going to stick this needle in your arm and inject this dye into your bloodstream so I can show some more contrast on the images. And I'm like, okay. What an implicit level of trust we have to have on these people. And I will give them 100% credit. They are one of the few industries left in the 21st century that still deserves that trust from us. And God bless every single one of them. They work shift work. They work overnights. I mean, I was at this MRI place at 6 a.m. It looked like this crew had been there since 3. They were ready to go, greeted me when I walked in, couldn't have been more accommodating, made me feel comfortable. Thankfully, I'm not claustrophobic, so I didn't have an issue with the actual MRI machine like I know a lot of people do. I will say I kept my eyes shut the entire time, because it is rather enclosed. Not as enclosed as I guess it was described to me in the past. Our medical community, miracle workers, every single one of them, and God bless them. And the attention and the kudos that they got during COVID, one of the very few good things to come out of that otherwise largely forgettable chapter in all our lives. Little recap of episode 3 here before we get into the crux of episode 4, which is going to be Kamala Harris, the DNC platform for 2024, and my thoughts on Kamala, and what you can expect in the next episode, which will be the last one before the election. As I sit here, election day is all of 4 days away. Ugh, unbelievable. What a day that's going to be. I'm going to beat this into the ground, but I'm going to say it every time until the actual day is here. Make sure you get out and vote. Make absolutely sure. Take advantage of the early voting if you can. Make sure, if you don't do that, that you get to the polls come hell or high water on November 5th. I don't care how long we have to stand in line. I don't care if it's 28 degrees and sleeting and snowing sideways. This is so important. It becomes clearer every single day how important this election is. I said from the beginning, I don't speak in hyperbole. I don't like phrases like most important election of our lifetime. They're all important. We're so fortunate to live in a society where elections are held. A lot of humans throughout history have not had the opportunity to vote for their leaders. We have that incredible privilege, and it is critically important that we all put that privilege to good use sometime between now and when the polls close in your jurisdiction on Tuesday, November 5th. I'll say from episode 3, wow, the sound was a lot better. Apparently the mini fridge was the culprit. I switched outlets on it, and now I've just kind of gotten in the habit that when I'm down here in my little setup here, I just unplug it for the time being. And that seemed to work pretty well. I was very, very happy with the audio quality in that third episode. I hope you were as well. I know it went a bit long. There's so much to cover on Donald Trump. There might be more to cover on him than any other human on Earth, and it's probably not close. There is just so much deception out there. Every word this man says, and no matter what you think of him, every word he says gets twisted into the worst possible interpretation. So weeding through that and getting to the point of what he's actually saying is made so much more difficult by this legacy media. Oh, God, they're disgusting. They are disgusting. And the closer this election day gets, they're unhinged. The more unhinged they become, it is right out there for the world to see. And we have a duty to expose this to as big of an audience as we can. Another part of the reason why I'm here now is to expose these people as the hack partisans that they are, that twist every situation, every word, every rally speech, everything this man says, and everything now his supporters say, or those near him say Elon Musk. All of a sudden we want to shut down Elon Musk. We got people calling for the imprisonment of Elon Musk, the most brilliant scientific engineering mind of our lifetimes. And there's a segment of the population that would love nothing more than to lock this man away for the rest of his life. I just can't. I just can't with this line of thinking. I'm here to help expose it, and I appreciate each and every one of you that is listening, that is participating in this, and helping me and others like me spread this word, because it is so important. I wanted to be thorough. I've made it clear I'm not a Republican. I am an independent that needs to be convinced. Every election cycle, I need to be convinced. Even by somebody that I've already supported. I voted for Donald Trump in 2016 and 2020. I needed to be convinced again. He's convinced me, and I wanted to be very thorough in why. It's not just because I have Trump blood coursing through my veins. I wanted to share what has convinced me, and that whole episode 3 was a detailed, but I thought thorough, dissertation of why I have made the voting decision that I have. A couple things I wanted to add. My January 6th rant, I obviously made my feelings clear on it, but I did forget one aspect, and that was the legal challenges. Those legal challenges, misguided as most of them ended up being in the eyes of the law, were perfectly reasonable under the circumstances. That's why such processes exist. There is a process for challenging election results that is available to every candidate in every election. And Donald Trump followed those processes. He followed the law. He filed his challenges. He lost all but one. And that one that he did win was not sufficient to overturn the results, and he left office on January 20th as he was supposed to. They didn't drag him out of there with his fingers clutching to the Resolute desk like the Democrats and the legacy media wanted so badly to see. He left. He was upset. He didn't agree with the result. He clearly doesn't agree with it to this day. But he left office like he was supposed to, and he has every right to not agree with the result. He's under no obligation to agree with the result. But he left office when he was supposed to, after his legal challenges were reviewed by legitimate courts, and all but one of them was dismissed. That's how the process is supposed to work. Oh, by the way, challenging election results did not originate with Donald Trump. Democrats have used the very process of counting electoral votes to challenge election results in 2000, 2004, and 2016. In other words, every Republican victory since 1988. Funny how that never gets brought up. Hillary Clinton spent Trump's entire first term calling him an illegitimate president. Does that sound like somebody who accepts election results? Sure doesn't to me. Stacey Abrams in Georgia spent 2 years referring to herself as the rightful governor of the state of Georgia. She was so convinced of her victory that she ran a second time and got defeated twice as badly by the same opponent. Democrats have no leg to stand on when it comes to accepting election results that they don't like. Again, they have challenged, during the electoral vote counting process, every election that the Republicans have won, presidential election, since 1988. 2000, 2004, 2016, challenged them all. I have a sneaking suspicion that if Trump somehow pulls this one out, I got a sneaking suspicion they're not going to accept the results. You know who has to certify the results for this election? Kamala Harris. We will see how that goes. But anyway, other than that, I thought it was a pretty tight episode. We are going to get more into the choice between these two candidates in our next episode. Really the stark differences, what I feel is on the line. And that'll be the last one before Election Day. And to nobody's surprise, I will be spending election night watching Megyn Kelly and her cast of all-stars on her YouTube feed. I encourage each and every one of you to join me on that. 8 Eastern, 7 Central. So that's where I will be on election night. Comfortably on my couch, watching one of the few news programs that I trust, with a cast of characters that I have an awful lot of faith in, that know what they're talking about, that will not spin anything, will not try to twist anything to fit a certain narrative. They're going to tell it like it is. Analyze it as it's happening. No spin, no nonsense. I can't wait. So, Kamala Harris. Little background here, just like we did with Trump. This is from a publication called TheWeek.com. It was what I felt the most thorough, concise background I could find. She was born in Oakland, California in 1964. Her mother, I'm going to try to pronounce this right. I apologize in advance if I don't. Shyamala, Shyamala, worked at Berkeley as a cancer researcher. And her father, Donald, was a renowned Marxist economist from Jamaica. I say Marxist for a reason, because A, he was, and B, that's how he was described in the article. Her parents separated when Kamala was 5. And she was mostly raised by her mother. They spent some time in Montreal during her high school years, after which she attended Howard University in Washington, D.C. She majored in political science and economics, and after that went to law school at UC Hastings, which is now known as UC College of the Law, San Francisco, which led to the beginning of her law career. She started off at the Alameda County DA's office in 1990. I'm not going to get into the Willie Brown stuff here. It's out there if you want it. It's not something I'm interested in. In my opinion, people make mistakes in their personal lives. Personal relationships are complicated. I'm not going to go there. It's out there if you want it. I'm not going to deal with it here. She was elected as San Francisco's DA in 2003 in a 3-way battle among all Democrats. We will get to that as well in the near future. She finished 2nd out of the 3 in the election. No one person won the majority of 50%, so the top 2 had a runoff, and she won the runoff in the second round a little over a month later, 56-44 percentage-wise. She was elected as Attorney General of California in 2010, winning by only 75,000 votes out of almost 9 million cast. The percentage breaks down to 46.1 to 45.3 over Republican Steve Cooley. That would be the last time that any Republican came remotely close to winning a statewide race in the state of California. She was reelected in 2014 by a much wider margin, 57 to 42, almost 2 million fewer votes cast. I'd be interested to learn more about why that happened. That's from 9 million down to 7. I mean, that's a significant drop. Maybe it was because it was a foregone conclusion who was going to win. Maybe. I'm speculating there, but I think that'd be interesting to find out why. Shortly after that, she was elected as a U.S. Senator from California in 2016. She ran roughshod over fellow Democrat Loretta Sanchez, 61 to 38, and very quickly made a name for herself by grilling Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh in 2018 during his highly contested hearings. She amassed the second most liberal voting record in the Senate this century during her tenure there, behind only Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts. But she used the increased notoriety from her performance at the Kavanaugh hearings to launch a presidential run for 2020, entering the Democrat primary in 2019. She announced her candidacy January 21st, raised some $40 million throughout the campaign. She spent some time as the front runner. I don't know if you remember, but she had a very strong first debate. That was the debate where she went after eventual nominee Joe Biden. Apparently there is no one that a high-ranking Democrat will not call a racist, including other high-level Democrats when it becomes politically convenient to do so. And that's what she did. And that, for a brief time, set her apart as the frontrunner in the race. She struggled as the frontrunner. The second debate did not go nearly as well for her as she was eviscerated by Tulsi Gabbard in the second debate about her record as a prosecutor, DA, and AG in California. The wheels kind of came off after that, and she ultimately suspended her campaign on December 3rd, 2019, before any primaries took place. She did not make the Iowa caucus. She earned no delegates, as we talked about. She endorsed Joe Biden on March 8th of 2020. Shortly after that, she was very involved in the George Floyd riots. If you remember, she was very heavy on social media, supporting a lot of the unrest that was going on around the country, specifically in Minneapolis. It is widely known she tweeted a link during the riots to fund bail for arrested rioters in Minneapolis, which remains extremely controversial to this day. She was selected as Biden's running mate on August 11th. She had what I thought was a strong performance in the only debate she had with Vice President Mike Pence. I thought the Mr. Vice President I'm speaking was incredibly condescending and a little grating, but that's just one man's opinion. But overall, I thought her performance was decent. She assumed the vice presidential role after Biden won in 2020 and became the first female vice president in American history. Now, as vice president, and she has made this very clear of late, she supported all of Joe Biden's policies. The Afghanistan withdrawal, the American Rescue Plan, response to COVID, infrastructure bill, Inflation Reduction Act. She claims to have been the last person in the room for all of these major policy decisions. Even when asked recently, what would you have done differently from Joe Biden? She has very clearly said, nothing comes to mind. These last 4 years, yes, Joe Biden was the president. Kamala Harris has had several opportunities to distance herself from some of the lesser popular policies of this administration, and she has chosen not to do so. So I think it's fair, given that reality, to connect her to what has been going on in the country the last 3.5, almost 4 years, for better or for worse. She has made it very clear she stands by the record that her and President Biden built, 100%. In late March of 2021, she was handed the responsibility of the migration issues at the southern border. I don't care if you want to call her the border czar. That became the sticking point. When she ascended to the nomination, this became, because our legacy media is so predictably useless, of course, the border czar or not discussion won the day instead of the actual border crisis, which is so like our legacy media, to focus on a term rather than the actual issue that is. It's not even political to say that our southern border has been a mess. It's a reality. It has been. But leave it to our legacy media to, well, no one ever said she was the border czar. She was put in charge of dealing with Central American countries to figure out the root causes of what was leading to this mass migration and to deal with it. Whether she was deemed the border czar or not by President Biden is completely irrelevant. She was put in charge of the border, and it became a mess. The Biden-Harris administration has the worst border record in recent history by illegal migrant statistics. They also accrued more debt than any other four-year administration in history. A lot of things she could have run from here. She stands by all of it. So keep that in mind. Then, all of a sudden, Biden has the horrible debate. Biden withdraws from the race. 2 days later, Kamala Harris is the Democrat nominee for president. We went over the media coverage. It was glowing, to say the least, despite her very low approval as vice president. The legacy media didn't seem to have much trouble putting out some not-so-friendly pieces on the vice president over the years. I'm guessing that was in an effort to protect the actual president. All of a sudden, that all changed. When she became the nominee, all of a sudden she was the greatest thing since sliced bread, and she was going to save us all, and, you know, we're so lucky to have her. She had one debate with the former president on September 10th on ABC that we have gone over somewhat before. It is my opinion that this was a complete softball lobbed to Kamala Harris for her to hit out of the park. There were no follow-ups on any of her responses. She had no fact checks. And a fair amount of the questioning sounded something like, you know, Donald Trump is really bad. Madam Vice President, your thoughts? Very hard to fail a test when the answer is already given to you. She resisted for several weeks to do any interviews or press conferences, reaching a point where even some on the left became annoyed and complained. It is of my opinion that they were hoping to ride the joy and the vibes and the brat all the way to Election Day. Well, eventually that vapor ran out, and she had to start getting out there and doing some interviews. So she started off with all the friendlies, of course. CNN, Oprah, Howard Stern. This didn't seem to move the needle very much. At least it got her talking. At least people got to hear her expressing her thoughts, her beliefs, what she planned on doing with the country, at least what she was willing to reveal. But eventually she was forced to broaden out when even that momentum stalled. She started with 60 Minutes and then even sat down with Fox News and Bret Baier. She did a lot of podcasts, most notably not doing the most popular podcast in the country, even though the door was open for her. I don't know if you've heard this yet, but not only did she refuse to go on Joe Rogan as Donald Trump did for 3 hours, followed up shortly by J.D. Vance going on Joe Rogan for the full 3 hours. The Harris campaign demanded that not only Joe Rogan come to them, as opposed to going to where his studio is and doing the show, his show, in his studio. They demanded that Rogan come to them and that the vice president would only sit with him for an hour. To which Joe Rogan said, "That is not my show." It put him in a position where he had to be the one saying no. But I hope people are smart enough to see through that. That's just not a good look. A presidential candidate should be able to sit with anyone for 3 hours and talk about their vision for the country. I think that would have been a very good opportunity for the rest of the country to learn about what Kamala Harris's plans are for this country. We deserve to know that. We as voters, as citizens, deserve to know the people who want to lead us, what their plans are. Despite all of this resistance to deal with any adversarial media, she maintains a tight race with Trump. Neither has been able to separate by more than a point or two in either direction. She's obviously a media darling. The glowing coverage of her just continues ad nauseum. Since July, this is per the Media Research Center again, since July, and we're only going to hit the big three legacy networks here, CBS, NBC, and ABC. The coverage of Kamala Harris on these three networks since July has been rated as 78% positive. During the same time period, for her opponent, Donald Trump, same three networks, same time period, 85% negative. 78% positive for Harris, 85% negative for Trump. The polling in this race is basically tied 48-48. So even if you say that the Media Research Center favors Republicans, it's still an indefensible difference. Take 20 points off either of those numbers, and it's still lopsided. This race is a coin flip. When you have coverage that is 78-15 in favor of one candidate, it's indefensible. This legacy media is so clearly not where the voters are in this country. But they've also made it clear that most of those people on the 48 side of Trump are simply irredeemably disgusting. Pick your buzzword. They've used a bunch of them. We're going to hit them all. They very clearly don't care. When the polling is 48-48, but the coverage is 78-15, you've got a problem. So, my personal thoughts on Kamala Harris. I have nothing personal against her. I have said from the start, I don't blame these Democrat politicians for acting like Democrat politicians. They're going to do as much as the media will let them get away with. The Republicans would too. That's why I blame the media, wholeheartedly 100%. So no, I have nothing personal against Kamala Harris. She seems like a fun person. I mean, I'd have a beer with her. She seems like somebody that would be fun to hang around with. My problem with her is I don't like how she ended up in this position. It is not disputable that she was chosen for VP by Joe Biden because Joe Biden promised Jim Clyburn, who gave him the endorsement he needed in the South Carolina primary to become the front runner and ultimately the nominee in the 2020 race. He promised her he'd pick a black woman for vice president. That happened. How else do you think he ended up settling on Kamala Harris, who had run she was a front runner for a minute, but overall a lousy campaign and dropped out before the first primary? How is that your number one choice? Well, because he painted himself into a corner by making that promise. I wish it wasn't so. I don't like anyone or any institution making hiring decisions this way. She flamed out in the campaign. She was way too far left in her politics, even for the Democrat primary voters. Yet she was picked anyway because Joe Biden made a promise to Jim Clyburn. This is not the way to do things, and we'll get into all that in more detail. I don't like how she dodged the media, especially media that would not carry a drool cup around while covering her. She avoided any interviews for a very long time in which she was going to actually be asked very difficult questions without being given multiple choice answers like she was on some early interviews. She refused to debate on Fox News. She only accepted the one debate, which ultimately ended up on ABC and was it was an embarrassment, not for her, for the network. She refused the terms of Joe Rogan's podcast, requesting that he come to her, which is just, I'm sorry, that's just a pompous, arrogant thing to do. He's the number one podcaster in the country. He doesn't need you. He didn't need Donald Trump. Trump went to him. You know, the campaign said, oh, she's busy. You don't think Donald Trump is busy? Running for president is a 24/7 operation for about 2 years. Somehow Donald Trump found a way to make it to the most popular podcast in the country, as did his vice presidential nominee, J.D. Vance. Somehow Kamala Harris couldn't find the time for it, even though more people would have tuned into that and learned more about her than any of these legacy media interviews. In my opinion, she lacks depth to her answers. She repeats a lot of the same canned lines. Hopes, dreams, and aspirations. How many times have you heard that this campaign season? And I know you're giving a lot of speeches. You've got to repeat some lines, but for heaven's sake, mix it up a little bit. And somehow those three words, which largely all mean the same thing, find their way into a lot of her answers, regardless of the substance of the question. Her line of being unburdened by what has been is way too Marxist for me. This endless, oh, we've got to make corporations and we've got to make the wealthy pay their fair share. Boy, are we going to dissect that canned line in great detail in the very near future. It feels like she talks in circles. She says things in triplicate, like I said, that all mean the same thing. She fills out answers. She'll talk a lot. She'll say a lot of words, but words that don't really have a whole lot of substance. A lot of platitudes, a lot of prepositional phrases. It's like an alphabet soup of answers. You know what? I just glanced down at my keyboard here. She doesn't talk in circles. She talks in ampersands. It's worse than circles. Like, okay, it starts off over here, and then it just goes way the hell out here, and okay, well, then kind of circles back a little bit. Okay, maybe we're bringing it back home here. Well, nope. Now we swing out over here. Oh, we're going to bring it right back to where we started. We're going to actually answer the question, and no. It ends up off just dead ending in no man's land. She talks in ampersands. She doesn't seem very comfortable explaining her positions. Now, there are two exceptions to that. She is crystal clear on abortion and her feelings about Donald Trump. On those two topics, she can speak incredibly clearly and passionately, but not on any others. They all kind of turn into this alphabet word soup of just you're trying to figure out if she's actually saying anything in a 2.5 minute answer, and you're just kind of left scratching your head at the end of it. That to me is concerning, that the only two things she can speak clearly on are abortion and Trump. There's more to American life than abortion and Trump, and she needs to be able to speak clearly on a wide range of things outside of those two. Here's my biggest personal concern. She ran very far left in 2019. Very, very far left progressive policies, gun buybacks, banning fracking, slavery reparations, Medicare for all with absolutely no idea how to pay for it. She's a hard left California progressive, and she ran like one. I mean, just to give you an example of what it takes to succeed in California politics, their state Senate right now is 32-8. Democrat to Republican, and getting the trend line is getting worse, not better. Their state assembly, largely the same thing, 62-18 Democrat to Republican, also trending more hard left. It's a far left state that's only getting more and more left wing. This is where she came from. Now, I'm an independent. I don't like super majorities. California has deteriorated, especially its inner cities. Single-party rule is largely to blame. The best policy almost always comes from a healthy variety of inputs. California has gone far left with very little, if any, dissent. There are no dissenting voices in any California governance, at least on their state level. There may be counties and some cities that, you know, maybe a little more fairly represented by the two major parties. But the state, on the whole, their representatives, largely Democrat. Their two senators are Democrats. Their governor is a wildly left Democrat. She hasn't distanced herself from any of these proposals. There's been some generic statements released by her campaign. She has not come out directly and refuted any of these. Most of the statements that have refuted anything she said in the past have come from the campaign, not from her directly. She hasn't backed away from any of these. And she has precious few real policy proposals for 2024. And the few that she has come out with, price controls, $25,000 for first-time home buyers, as if that isn't going to inflate the price of an already inflated house price. I know this is how the left thinks, but the few policy proposals she has come out with have been disastrous. Handing out money based on race, you know, I'm generalizing there, but that was another one of her policies. I mean, more detailed than that, but that was the gist of it. She came from a very left state. She had the second most liberal voting record in the Senate during her tenure. She ran as a far left progressive in 2019 and was resoundingly rejected by her own party. Now, one of two things is true here. Either she is the left-wing radical that she claimed to be and ran as in 2019, and she's struggling to answer questions because she's trying not to let slip what she really believes, because she knows that these far-left policies are not popular on a nationwide level, and she's trying to play towards the center to get elected. That's option one. Or she's completely empty, void of any actual ideals of her own, which basically would just make her the face of the Democrat machine for the next 4 years if she's elected. And this machine will be able to steer her in whatever direction it wants. And we'll just run into another term of the machine running the country rather than the president, just like we have the last 4 years. I'm not cool with either one of these. They both scare the hell out of me for different reasons, but they both scare me. There's way too many bureaucrats at the ready to force her hand if she is not strong in her convictions. And if she is strong in her convictions, she's far too radical if she really is the candidate that she ran as in 2019. So those are my reasons that I will not be voting for Kamala Harris. Now, the DNC platform. This is taken from the American Presidency Project, just like I got the RNC platform talking points from. I'm going to go over them real quick first, just kind of write down the list, and then I will come back and discuss a few of the issues that I have with a few of these. Number one, grow our economy from the bottom up and middle out by investing in America, fighting poverty, and ending special interest giveaways. Number two, reward work, not wealth. This means cutting taxes for working families, and here it is again, the rich and corporations pay their fair share. Number three, lowering costs on healthcare, childcare, gas, groceries, and housing. Number four, tackling the climate crisis, lowering energy costs, and securing energy independence by producing cleaner, affordable energy. Hello, nuclear. That's not what they want, though. Clean energy jobs, reducing pollution, environmental justice, whatever the hell that is, buzzword city, climate resilient communities, conservation, and global climate leadership. Number five, protecting communities and tackling the scourge of gun violence by instituting gun safety, reviewing policing and public safety policies, criminal justice reform, which President Trump already did, and protecting women from violence. Would that include migrant crime? How about the no cash bail that puts hardened criminals back on the street, or soft on crime prosecution? I'm sorry, I said I'd go through the list. Number six, strengthen democracy, protect freedoms, and advance equity. Appointing judges. That means packing the appointing judges, voting rights, abortion. They don't call it that. They call it something else. I will never call it anything other than abortion. Racial equity, LGBTQ, combating hate, protecting freedom of religion, freedom of the press, and addressing concerns of D.C., Puerto Rico, and other territories. Number seven, secure our border and fixing broken immigration systems by expanding legal immigration and deterring illegal immigration. Number eight, advancing the unity agenda by beating the opioid crisis, investing in mental health, protecting kids online, competition, ending cancer, and meeting the needs of veterans and military families. Love that one. I wish that was on the RNC one. That's well done. And number 9, strengthen American leadership worldwide by strengthening our economy, leading with diplomacy and American values, and supporting the strongest military in the world. So there are the major points for the DNC platform for 2024. Now, a few of the issues I have here. Under item 4, produce cleaner, affordable energy. The Democrat Party has a bizarre resistance to nuclear power, which, when done correctly, is the cleanest, most renewable, and most plentiful energy source ever conceived by man. Yes, there are nuclear waste issues to deal with, and of course the off chance of a Chernobyl-like disaster. Now, I'd like to think that at this point in human history, we're a little further along in being able to avoid such disasters, but it feels to me like nuclear energy is something that is not as explored and implemented as it feels like it should be. Again, environmental justice, what the hell is that? Just say you want to take care of the environment. You can't just put any word in front of justice and call it a policy. Because how could you ever say no to justice? Just like putting the word freedom after anything. How could you be against freedom? I hate buzzwords like this. Hate them. Regarding their concerns of violence against women, which, yes, should be right at the top of the list, why is migrant crime not mentioned? And these no cash bail systems that are becoming more and more numerous around the country, these by definition put people that just committed crimes back on the street. Because we don't want to be unfair to people that can't afford to bail themselves out. They were still arrested for a suspected crime. I don't understand. I don't understand how we're going to put people's lives and property at risk because we don't want to be unfair to someone who can't afford to bail themselves out after being accused of committing a crime already. And this is all further complicated by soft-on-crime, very left-wing prosecutors and district attorneys across the country who can make the decisions on what crimes to prosecute and what not to. Just because crime statistics might not be where they are, that doesn't necessarily mean crime is down if we're just not prosecuting crimes at the rate that we used to. But that's a discussion for another day. Advancing equity, I will never, ever, ever support anything that involves the word equity. It is a poisonous word that we are going to get into in some detail in the future. Equity, by its very definition, seeks equal outcomes. Not equal opportunity, that is equality. That is a completely different thing that I am 100% in support of. I am 100% against equity. No civilization will survive if the ultimate goal is everybody ends up in the same place, regardless of skill, effort, talent, and want to. Voting rights. Every American citizen can vote, except for some felons in some states. Other than that, every American citizen can vote. And I'm sick of the implication that anything else is true. They can use whatever form of the word abortion they want to. It has changed multiple times over the years. I will not give any of these buzzword fake definitions or I will not give any of these other terms any time on my air. It is abortion. We will talk about abortion in detail in the future, but I'm sick of the left changing what they call it every single election cycle to try to make it more palatable for people. It's abortion. Call it what it is. This racial equity and LGBT, I'm so sick of the endless segmenting of our society. This group, that group. This is so toxic for so many reasons. Again, I don't want to get too sidetracked here, but I hate that we started doing this right around 2011, 2012 is when it really got ridiculous and has only gone further since. Combating hate, does that include referring to your political opponent as Adolf Hitler? Because it kind of feels like that's a little hateful. Protecting freedom of religion, Catholic hospitals being forced to perform abortions, That doesn't sound much like religious freedom. Freedom of the press? Well, unless they don't endorse a Democrat, apparently. Have you seen the meltdown at the Washington Post because Jeff Bezos refused to, for like the 20th presidential election in a row, endorse the Democrat? As if anybody is out there trying to figure out who does the Washington Post support for president this year. I don't know. I mean, I read their newspaper and their editorial page every day. I just can't figure it out. Yeah, it's kind of obvious, but they wouldn't actually come out and say it. So, of course, everybody at that paper had to have a hissy fit like my kids used to when I said, no, we're not having pizza for dinner for the third time this week. Grow up, people. Seriously. Handle things like an adult. Anyway. And then the D.C., Puerto Rico issues. It's not a mystery why the Democrats want to add D.C. as a state. It votes 93% Democrat. If it voted 93% Republican, do you really think that would be on the DNC platform? Anyway, it says right in our Constitution that D.C. is not to become a state for very specific reasons. But the Constitution seems to be an inconvenience more than an impediment to a certain segment of our elected officials these days. So that's my take on it. I mean, I'm obviously, my opinion is the Republican platform is superior to the Democrat platform. I think the Democrat candidate leaves a lot to be desired. Again, I have nothing against her personally, but I have a big problem putting somebody in the most important position on earth whose policies I don't understand, whose policies she cannot even clearly explain and support. It's too powerful of a position. You can't go in there as a blank slate, just ready to be taken advantage of by all the elites in your party. When you go to sit down with Kim Jong-un or any of our adversaries, Xi Jinping, you can't go in there as brat, okay? That's not going to get it done. Vibes are not going to get it done, nor will your endorsement from 15 different celebrities. They don't care. They respect strength. They respect vision, and anything else will be met with aggression by our enemies, and that's bad for everyone. So that about wraps that up. Now, on the next episode, which again will be our last one before the election, I'm going to speak very candidly with you about these two visions for the country. I'm going to compare these two parties as they currently stand, how they're trending. We'll compare the candidates a little more head-to-head. We'll compare these last two administrations. I want to do a little segment I'm going to call Worst of Both Worlds, just a one-time thing that we're going to do in this next episode. You'll understand what I mean when we get there. And then we're all going to make our final decision. We're going to get to the polls, and we're going to vote, and then we are going to follow the results and see what happens. And I certainly hope that we get a result sooner than later. My hope is that Donald Trump wins convincingly enough that this can be announced on Tuesday night, like presidential races always used to be. Very rarely did we not know that night who was going to win. And again, if everyone just did what Florida does, I'm not exactly sure what Florida does. I'm not a Florida vote counting expert, but obviously they're doing something right. If our third most populous state can count everything inside of 2 hours, that is something that needs to be copied and pasted to all the other 49 states. That's how elections need to be done. We need to know what the results are in a reasonably short period of time so that the country can understand what's ahead of it and start to move forward rather than spend the next 5 days fighting about four votes in some suburban county in outside of Phoenix. That's not good for the country. No matter what happens, I fear there will be unrest if this result goes a certain way. No matter who you support, do not be part of that. No matter what, whether your chosen candidate wins or not, be peaceful, no violence. We will survive no matter what happens. One road will certainly be more difficult than the other, but we will survive. I hope in your heart you believe that as I do. So we're going to wrap here. Again, thank you so much for joining me here. This has been Spin Sold Separately. I am JD. Don't be a jerk. Pie is better than cake. and I'll talk to you next time.